My name is Sylvia, and I'll be your operator for today's call. Keep in mind that all the attendees are in silent mode. Ahead, we have a Q&A session. For those that are in the English session and connected only by the web, please send your questions through the platform. Please keep in mind that this teleconference is being recorded. As of now, we give the floor to Juan Carlos Gomez, Manager of Investor Relations, to begin this conference. Good morning. Thank you for joining us in this call of the results of the second quarter of 2020 of Grupo Sura. I'd like to remind you, you can access the recording of this conference at gruposura.com. There, you will also find the slides that we'll be following during this setting. For the attendees in English, on the webcast, you will find the slides both in English and in Spanish, and the questions will be received from you through the platform. For those that are connected instead on the webcast, you can choose the language on the top left of the window of audio. Today we have in this call from Grupo Sura, our CEO, Gonzalo Perez, Ricardo Jaramillo, our VP of Corporate Finance, Juan Luis Munera, VP of Legal Affairs, Luis Fernando Soto, Manager of Accounting, and from our affiliates, we have Carlos Oquendo, VP of Corporate Finance of Sura Asset Management, and Juan Fernando Uribe, VP of Finance and Investments of Sura Americana. Now I will give the floor to our CEO, Gonzalo Perez. Thank you so much, Juan Carlos, and again, greetings to everyone. Thank you for joining us in this call to talk about the results of Grupo Sura at June 30th. As before, we would like to provide you a context of these results, given the viewpoint of the employees of the company. Obviously, we talk about the corporation, clients, and business, as well as risks, opportunities, and the financial results of the company. For us, it's very important to keep these focus, and along with the affiliates, we've been able to cruise through these five concepts, which are the main objectives of the companies of Grupo Sura and all the businesses of Grupo Sura, especially during this pandemic. When we talk about employees, it's important to underscore several things. First, to keep the 30,000 jobs was our first purpose since March when we began the pandemic and we began really the lockdown. And till today, not only have we kept those 30,000 jobs, but also and fundamentally in Colombia, when it comes to providing health care in this pandemic, we've hired more than 1,500 people in the healthcare area so that we could be more proactive and provide a service to clients above what they were expecting. And really, we considered that we've achieved it. In addition, we have focused the company's employees to move from really moving if, because of the pandemic, they have administrative positions and they don't have such a burden, they can really serve customers directly. And truly, it's not only been something efficient, but it has enabled us to keep with our service promises in terms of employees when it comes to those that have been subject to COVID-19. In total, we were at about 120 employees, which really is not a high figure fundamentally because more than 10,000 of our employees are in the healthcare area and obviously are more exposed. So really with this, our priority was to take care of the health of all our employees until now we have done this with good results. In terms of corporation, it's important to underscore that our work goes beyond the contributions from the economic viewpoint that we have made in 10 countries where we operate or where there's presence of our affiliates, because we have contributed as well with our knowledge and we think it's absolutely fundamental. Indeed, we have desktops with local governments that we've worked with, especially in Colombia and Antioquia, with Barranquilla, and other local authorities have allowed the government and other factors, including ourselves, could add up our knowledge to serve the pandemic, to look at the logistics and exactly everything that could lead us to a better, not only service of physical and health, mental health care, but also financial health care. So I believe that knowledge is what we would like to underscore as a new contribution that we're creating in the societies where we operate, and that is in different countries where Sudamericana is, as well as Suda Asset Management, the contributions of our knowledge, insisting not only for health care as a priority, of course, but obviously for economic reactivation. So there we've created teams. We have worked with different authorities to seek how our knowledge can contribute not only for our customers, but to reactivate the countries and society. It's very important with regards to clients and businesses to obviously talk about COVID tests. In Colombia, for instance, as you know well, we have a very significant share in terms of mandatory health care plans, or what we call basic health care plans. And 13% of the tests of the country have been made by us. Obviously, we're not scattered throughout the entire country, but instead we're in the main countries. But that 13% as a total has led us to make more than 200,000 tests. Remember, we started making the tests and obviously to acquire all the material and the kits necessary to do so. So there we'd like to highlight that our capability that began with 1,000 tests a day increased 200%, and now we're making 4,000 tests a day in the country, and the idea is to get close to 15,000 a day. And we're working now with oxygen therapy, which is very important to control the expansion and above all the use of ICUs. That oxygen therapy comes with a German technology. EPS Suda brought it to Colombia. Today we have more than 4,000 patients served, and those patients served are showing great results. It's important here to say that the anticipation that we had of mobility, in the sense that one of the coverages that we have is that mobility can be non-mobility, and to have 1,300 healthcare at home services provided through oxygen therapy led us to serve people at their homes with this therapy, which again avoids people leaving their homes to be served at hospitals and obviously reaching ICUs. That not only controls the pandemic but also improves the health, and that has led us to have a death rate for those in Suda and affiliates of Suda is of 0.55%, while the country and worldwide, it's about 3%. To support economic reactivation, the ARL has advised more than 100,000 companies with all of the biosecurity protocols. And that's important because those protocols have allowed those companies to open and obviously to reactivate, and that we've delivered more than 14 million protection gears to the different companies. And it's important to highlight that before the pandemic, that gear could not be given by them. But then with the decree in Colombia that was enacted, we could give them, and fortunately we had them in our healthcare provider services. We had that gear in our reserves. And that also allowed us to anticipate the delivery to our affiliates. and impetus asura, which is a strategy that Sura Medicare has had for a couple of years, and was already starting off with its beginning last year, or at the beginning of this year, has provided 44,500 consultancy services to SMEs, such in topics in human talent, tax advisement, financial, digital marketing. So that these SMEs have that assistance for their economic reactivation as well. It's a value added that we provide SMEs to increase the loyalty from Suramericana for them, but also to attract new clients. And as I said before, 44,500 companies have been served. Likewise, we have new solutions. As we said in our past talk, part of returning the adaptation of solutions, of provisions, and obviously the capabilities according to the pandemic, there are new products such as Plan Elige, Salud Digital, Vida Digital. There's a complementary plan for seniors above 60 that has been successful. We have really new projects in 9 countries where Sudamericana operates. And Autosura, for instance, in Uruguay, has made an acquisition that has also led us to add a bit that we're not only trapped in the present, but with the due diligence and pertinence, we have continued to invest in the development of the strategy, such as Autosura in Uruguay with the acquisition, as we said, of a corporation for automobiles, and in Sura Asset Management by launching new real estate funds and financing for SMEs that complement what Sudamericana does. The incorporation of a SICAP in Luxembourg recently made very important to obviously cover a very specialized market, but recently also the formalization of fiduciary Sura and the closing of this acquisition of the fiduciary in Colombia have shown that we're not only serving today what we have today, but also working the strategy to develop the future of these companies, especially Sura Asset Management and Sudamericana. When it comes to risks and opportunities, we've been mentioning really there's been a huge increase in commercial effectiveness. I think here what we'd like to comment here is how we quickly transformed all of the agents, channels for Sura Asset Management and Sura Americana. And that transformation took advantage online and also led to a higher commercial effectiveness and obviously a closer assistance to the distribution channels to be more certain about their actions when it comes to different clients. At Sudamericana, we've seen more demand for healthcare and life solutions, naturally. We're not going to see automobiles fundamentally because of the less use and the policies that the coverage is related to their use. But still, we have a compensation. That's the virtue of having multiple products and solutions and being in multiple regions, because we can balance the revenue of the company. And in this case, we're talking about solutions of life and health that have a very important demand. And when it comes to Sura Asset Management, we would like to underscore that the regulatory changes that we expected, we knew. I think that even fortunately as an industry, but especially as a company, how to take advantage of the regulatory change, the opportunity given to the affiliates in Chile, for instance, to take 10% out of their pension has really changed the outlook and the expectation as well as the reputation of the mandatory funds of pensions. And it was really an opportunity first to make people aware that that money was theirs, it was their savings, that they could access it, that the fact that the funds were from private funds facilitated and boosted their access to their savings, obviously aware that that saving was for their retirement, but really that there was a specific need, and they found that the people were quite proactive from AFP Capital, and that the deliveries of those 10% of the funds to the affiliates was great, and that led to a great reputation and to excellence in the service of AFP Capital. In addition, giving the money, providing that money even 3 days before what was issued, and fortunately with higher yields also than what people expected. When it comes to Colombia and Mexico, beginning with Mexico, the reform that's underway of moving from 6 to 15% of the contribution is a reform that will reach a coverage of 97% of the formal population. That's an improvement for the system of Mexico. And in addition, the increase of the quotation is undoubtedly an opportunity that we have to provide a new service and to have assets that will lead us to the responsibility to tell the people their expectation could be when it comes to retirement based on that new savings of 15%, which the 9 in addition is important to underscore given by the employers. So far, the proposal of the reform for us is great, and there, Suda Asset Management in Mexico is working closely with all the entities and the people affiliate to obviously disclose the reform and to give transparency to what this reform can imply to the affiliates for the retirement plan in Colombia. We have the statement of non-viable of the decree that intended what's called the pension commutation. As we said before, it was a proposal of the government, and we simply, as Protección, were attentive to the chance that the commutation could take place. We want to say again that pensional commutations are normal in these business of pensions. So in that sense, the Supreme Court of Justice ruled that it had no grounds. And the decree that allowed the lower quotation from 16 to 3% of the pension for employers and employees. And that, of course, led, obviously, to a process to recovery for the employers and the employees in those months, which reduced the contribution of the pensions. With regards to Peru, and ahead, Ricardo will show us some very specific decrees and regulations based on COVID-19. But the idea is to clarify that right now there are some pension reform proposals, which are not only seen in Latin America, but worldwide, seeking, among others, more coverage and better replacement rates, which is something really good if we continue participating constructively and seeking solutions, because we are aware of those two needs for all of the affiliates, not only in the case of Latin America, but in the rest of the world. When it comes to voluntary savings, which is part of the relevant strategy of Suda Asset Management, it is important to highlight that when it comes to this very first semester of 2020, there is a net flow of savings of 1.9 trillion. And now we're reaching 57 trillion in voluntary savings. This is a sum that we want to highlight because it's a sum that has been taking, again, and gaining importance within the exercise of Suda Asset Management, which is part, as I said, of its strategy. And in that sense, really for a semester like the one that we've been experiencing, talking about $1.9 trillion in net flow above is something great. When it comes to financial viewpoint, as you can remember, we had two very clear purposes, liquidity and solvency. This quarter was very special in terms of liquidity and solvency because when it comes to Grupo Sura, we paid yields of the debt of 2020 with a cash generation of 131 billion pesos. And this is important because the figure, which although it's true that it's not a huge figure compared to the figures that Grupo Sura generally manages, it is a reduction of the debt in a quarter in a period that's special to everyone. The dollar-based hedging of the debt is equivalent to 6% of the total of our exposure in dollars, and that has been relevant as well from the viewpoint of the volatility that we can have in the results. It's already a hedging, practically absolute, over affectation of the exchange rate. And the fact of making a local issuance on August 11th of bonds, ensuring our resources for the yields of 2021, with what importance that Ricardo will be mentioning ahead when it comes to rates and series, and how much trust of the market there was to demand those bonds, we believe that it's very relevant. And it's also very relevant because we add to the rating of Sudamericana and Sura Asset Management the ratification made by Fitch, AAA, the debt of Sudamericana, and Sura Colombia, and in Sura Asset Management, well, the ratification of its rating of Baa1 by Moody's in June 2020. That undoubtedly allowed us to make a placement, which we believe was successful, of our bonds of $1 trillion that we just made in 2020 to cover, as I said before, our yields in maturities in 2021. When it comes to the development of revenue, there is a recovery, and that shows better results than those that we expected. You can see in the graph clearly in the segment of casualty or non-life business how we've had a recovery in total segment of non-life business, or what we call casualty. It's lower in automobile, a bit better in the mandatory, but there is a recovery. And when it comes to life segment, we see very clearly that the drop was slower, but there is a slight recovery when it comes to life for all the companies. Here we're talking about the companies in 10 countries. I think that for us it's important to say that even in the casualty segment, operations outside of Colombia participated in significantly to create the profits in the second semester. Argentina, just like last year, had a drop in the revenue of Suramericana. This year, there's a recovery. And obviously, the rest of the companies in general terms show great results in Colombia. And that's not only good because we're multi-product, multi-solution, multi-region, but we can have more sustainability and more solvency for the companies. In health, as we said before, there are positive variations. It's quite logical because of the time that we're experiencing. There were falls when it comes to diagnostic aids and obviously in the HMOs. But there is a growth in which the compensation is giving a growth of double digit to all of the affiliates of Sudamericana by the end of June of this year. And when it comes to revenue from commissions, there's a recovery as well. It's very important that Sura Asset Management has achieved revenues from commissions. In March, we had our worst moment, yes, but there has been a recovery in the mandatory, even a higher recovery than the unemployment rates in the case of mandatory. In voluntary, we've also seen a recovery in this last quarter, which I think is important because, again, our expectations were lower than those that we are seeing today. And in terms of reserves, Ricardo later will talk about the impact that you know will on the income statements of SUDA Asset Management, but really in terms of the reserves, SUDA Asset Management had a good quarter. And in its profits, I will see a good second quarter. Obviously, in all of these cases, SUDA Asset Management had lower than those of last year, but they're positive regarding our expectations at the beginning of this pandemic. Overall, this is our introductory remark of this conversation, and now let's move on to Ricardo, who will deepen on the income statements of the company and its cash flow. Thank you so much again for being with us. Thank you so much, Gonzalo, and good morning to you all. I'd like for you to please look at slide 8. And there we can tell you what Gonzalo mentioned about the recent issuance of bonds of Grupo SUDA made on August 18th. First, let me tell you a bit which are the purposes and benefits of this issue, and then some of the figures. The main purpose, clearly, to anticipate to handle the cash flow of 2021. However, there are other benefits of this issue. One that's very important is to look at the profile of maturities of the cash flow of Grupo SUDA. And we can see in the graph that bar of 2021, which is at $1,022,000,000, moves from being high, and we distributed it to four series, 1 to 3 years, 1 to 7, 1 to 12, and the other one on a longer term for 20 years. And all three series are quite balanced in two amounts, and as you can see, much more connected to the generation of cash flow of the company. Another benefit is the natural coverage that's generated in Grupo SUDA. Since we have all of our revenues of dividends of the companies in pesos, to have the debt in pesos is also good because it decreases the exchange exposure. And clearly with the market conditions of today, we could improve the cost of the liability by 50 basic points. So now let's look at some of the figures of the issue. Let's begin by saying that the placement initially was about 800 billion with the option of 200 billion more. Given the good conditions we saw in terms and rates, we decided to have those 200 more. So we placed the trillion. Total demands were close to 1.8 trillion, which reiterates the trust that the market has in the company. On the other hand, when we look at average cost, look at the rate of 4.89 for the issuance. It's quite low, and it keeps in mind the current conditions of the reference rates of IBR and inflation. Now let's look at slide 9, and we'll see the numbers of the income statement of Grupo SUDA. We'd like to highlight several points. First, the resilient growth of the main business lines. Second, the strength of the diversification of the portfolio of Grupo SUDA. And clearly we can see for revenue, these reach 10 trillion, dropping 4% solely, which we think is positive given the current conditions and the effects which are seen in the market. Let's look at the first three lines of our revenue. Retained premiums, revenue from commissions, and services provided, which are entirely connected to our business units. All of these lines have a growth still positive. Even in services provided, we're growing 20%, and the same percentages that we've seen in recent years. Also, when it comes to revenues from investments, although we're dropping 33% with a differential versus last year of 367 billion, we'd like to highlight here is that in the second quarter, the result was quite positive because we could recover about 750 billion. If you look at the presentation of the first quarter of that item, we had a negative of $25 billion. So it's quite important, that recovery that we've observed. On the other hand, the equity method, we have an effect, the biggest one, compared to last year, a lower amount of $519 billion, dropping 77%, mainly explained because of the provisions that Bancolombia has had to anticipate in its acknowledgement of the special time. I'd like to highlight here especially that Nutresa, and you saw the numbers of Nutresa, has contributed great resources for this equity method and ratifies what was said initially, the importance of the diversification of the portfolio of Grupo Sura. Operating expenses, we're making huge efforts here. We see a growth of 2%. That growth includes expenses that have been necessary to handle the pandemic. When we look particularly at operating expenses, we see that they've grown 7.6%. If we exclude the expenses related to the pandemic, that growth would be close to 4.3%. It's also important to mention here that the claims ratio plus reserves show us a decrease because we have a lower claims ratio that we'll see ahead and because of the decrease that we've been looking at. When we look at the cost of services provided, it's important to highlight that the growth of these costs is lower than the growth that we've seen with revenues, meaning the operation of health is creating a positive margin. All this to reach an operating profit of 922 billion pesos, which we consider is a good figure with a drop of 39%. After the financial result, we reach a net earning of 245 billion pesos, which shows a drop compared to last year, but really shows a big recovery in the second quarter, which gives us a sign or a significant recovery, as Gonzalo mentioned in his introduction. Moving on to slide number 10, we can see how we build the net profit of Grupo Sura and how we see the recovery in the second quarter was quite important. We still see an impact on the reserve and in the equity method, as we mentioned, but we want to highlight the good dynamics of the companies of Suramericana and Sura Asset Management. Beginning with Suramericana, we see that the profit in the semester reached 293 billion pesos, up 68%. With Sura Asset Management, it's divided into two. On the one hand, Sura Am, without the reserve, with a profit reaching 130 billion. And with the reserve, it still gives us a negative close to 10 billion pesos. On the other hand, the equity method is mainly impacted by Bancolombia. However, there we have the positive result of Nutresa, compensating in some that effect of Bancolombia. When we look at the items related to Grupo Sura particularly, we have the growth of the exchange rate in the first quarter, as well as the expenses and interest of Grupo Sura to reach then that profit of 245 billion pesos that I mentioned before. I'd like to highlight on the lower part of the slide the results of the second quarter. And as we see, it reached a net total profit of 321 billion, which compared with the result of the second quarter of 2019, a year that was quite positive for Grupo Sura as a whole, with a profit of 390 billion. It's a decrease of 18%, but given all the conditions that we've had with the crisis, we consider it's a good result for the quarter. Moving on to slide 11, we can see the variation of the property of Grupo Suda and its different components versus those of 2019. And this is the bridge in which, in other times, we have shown you. Looking at the net profit in 2019 of $951 billion in the first semester, we see how Suda Americana has contributed positively $119 billion versus the profit it brought in that same period the year before. We see how Suda Asset Management mainly has a negative effect related to reserve. And there we see the bar of $228 billion that we saw before, and how this company has had a recovery, but still does not compensate what we brought last year. However, in the year 2018, it was not that great for capital markets, but 2019 was great. So I think it's totally logic that this year we're not going to have such a great year like that of 2019, and that's why we have to look at that $228 billion compared to 2019. Also, the equity method is having an important impact on our figures. We're decreasing $400 billion, which is mainly because, as you saw in the Bancolombia call, it's the anticipation to the provisions to acknowledge the possible impact related to economic variables, the growth of GDP, etc. In the other items of Grupo Suda, the total is an affectation of 116, mainly related to the exchange impact and some interests, which are particularly collecting most of the debt hedging strategy that we have now, to end at that 245. Moving to slide 13, we'd like to begin showing the results of Suda Americana. We'd like to highlight that the results were driven by a lower claims ratio, by a strong control of expenses, even compensating the expenses related to the pandemic, and by the growth of revenue, which, as you can see, continues being positive. Operating revenue in the first semester of the company reached $8.8 trillion, up 10.5%. We consider it's quite important. When we look at the premiums, particularly, look at dynamics of those issued, which grew 7.1%, retained grew 1.4%, reaching retained premiums with a positive growth of 2.7%. The next part that we want to highlight are the retained claims ratio, which, as we said before, the company has been showing very good levels of claims ratio, which have dropped about 6%. And we'd like to highlight also the cost of services provided and how this has more growth than the cost. So we reached a technical result of $1.4 trillion with an 18% variation, which we deem is very important. And if we look at the graph on the right-hand side, bottom right-hand side, we can see how it's a technical result and as a percentage of the operating revenues has been displaying growth in the last quarters. Also highlighting that, especially in the second quarter, that technical result compared to the quarters of 2019 and the first quarter of 2020 is particularly higher. Operating expenses show an 8.3% growth. However, when we exclude the specific expenses related to managing the pandemic, we see that 8.3 really is growth of 0.4%, of 0.4%. And when we particularly look at the growth of expenses in the quarter, we have a drop of 7.2%, which shows the effort that the company is making to control the expenses, understanding this in the situation that we're living. All these numbers, also adding that the interest with which Gonzalo told us about the amortization of the debt made by the company, that number of interest can drop to close to 15%, because what we amortized was 50% of the company's debt, That number of interests of the company will reduce from here on. So with all this, and also understanding that particularly the item of taxes has been significantly growing because of taxes related to the spinoff of the portfolio that Life has had. Remember, we made a merger of Life and ARL, and then we had to spin off a portfolio to optimize capital. There we generated some taxes, and that's why we have that 127% increase. To then arrive to a net earning of $293 billion, which is very positive. Some of the topics already mentioned can be seen in the trend of the graphs. I already talked about the technical results, but I want you to look at the graphs of the development of the retained earning premiums, a growth or a level very similar to the different quarters. On the other hand, the retained claims ratio shows a significant improvement in that second semester, as mentioned. Revenue from services provided and costs from services provided, seen as percentage, show a growth in revenue that's related to that good dynamics that our health segment has had in recent years, already reaching 3.8, a bit more, of affiliates. And the cost ratio has kept at a proper level, which, given the current situation, we consider is quite positive. On the lower right-hand side, you can see the operating expenses as a percentage of revenues, and these are at 18.6. But if we exclude the expenses related to the pandemic, we're talking about 16%. Now let's move on to slide number 14 to show you how we have built the profits of Suramericana in the first semester. So now let's see how Life contributes $231 billion, practically flat versus last year. Casualty presents very good dynamics, particularly here, as Gonzalo mentioned. We like to highlight the good operation in the different countries other than Colombia in the first semester, especially Argentina, Mexico, Dominican Republic, and Panama, are contributing significantly to that 288% growth of casualty, an additional proof of the importance of the diversification and all the expansion we've had in recent years. The health segment is positive, and I think we should underscore that it's good. It's at a balanced point, keeping in mind all of the current situation. It's very positive. And the other related items to the corporate operation expenses, interests, taxes that I mentioned, that I told you why they increased, to reach that profit of $293 billion. On the lower part of the table, we'd like to highlight that the second quarter was very positive, showing a growth of 235% versus the second quarter of Suramericana in 2019. Now let's move to slide 15. You can see the variation versus what we had in 2019. Well, you can see that the trend is repeated. Here we'd like to highlight a positive claims ratio of the Life segment that has grown with issued premium 7% from 60.1 to 54.2. When it comes to casualty, that I said before, some of the reasons why it's still quite positive, besides multi-annual contracts for fires, we see a lower claims ratio from 51.5 to 47.7. And we also see a recovery, a major recovery, in the profit of Argentina, which, with the recent renegotiation of the Argentinian government of the debt, will give us more stability as to revenue from investments of this company, again, adding to this bridge of profits, 123 billion pesos. When it comes to health, in the very first semester of 2019, we had a loss. So we're adding even 17 billion this first semester. Remember that the prior semester, we had a strong migration of affiliates to our EPS, and we had a peak of claims ratio in that first semester particularly. On the other hand, corporate accounts are subtracting 20 billion pesos, mainly, as I said, because of the increase of taxes related to the spinoff to reach that 293 that I mentioned. So I invite you to look at slide 17 to look in detail the financial results of SUDA Asset Management. Firstly, I'd like to highlight revenue from commissions, resilient commissions, and growth of positive AUMs. We still have the impact of the reserve. However, there is an important recovery versus the first quarter. So we see revenue from commissions of the company are practically showing a 0% variation, which in local currency drops 2%. Here I'd like to highlight, especially there's a case in Peru. In the company of Peru, you saw the decree which gave the chance to the employers and to the affiliates to not contribute during a month. That had an impact, of course, on our figures, close to $8 billion. We see then the difference of the reserve. We see the affectation and the equity method that you know that this company, its participation in Protección, mainly explained also because of the revenue of investments, to reach operating revenue of $1,158,000,000, dropping 23.5%. When it comes to insurance margin, we see a drop of 16%, and here, mainly, I'd say there's an impact related to the final delivery of the company, the annuities Mexico, which, as you know, we ceded the assets and liabilities in recent months. In operating expenses, we also see a huge effort to keep them controlled, growing 4.5%. In this company, we've had 10 billion additional pesos because of expenses of the pandemic, especially in Peru and Chile, where we've had a lot of operations related to retirements, withdrawals. So with this, we have an operating earning of 320 billion pesos, dropping 55%, mainly again because of the investment revenue. So at the end, we reached a net earning in the semester of 120 billion pesos, dropping 65.2%. Looking at the graphs on the right-hand side of the slide, we see that revenue from commissions show a fall that I told you about Peru, but it's really a revenue that we consider versus the other quarters that's resilient. If we compare, for instance, with the first quarter of 2019, practically it's at the same level. We had a growth of 10 billion per quarter, and we see that from a peak in the fourth quarter of 2019, 597, we dropped to 539 because of the pandemic. Moving to the graph of revenue from reserves, we see the recovery. In the second quarter of 20, we saw a recovery of 284 billion, which compensates significantly that fall of the first quarter and leads us to have a positive of 23 billion pesos. Now on the lower section of the slide, we see operating expenses and the indicator as a percentage of the net operating revenue. And here we'd like to highlight several things. First, in the second quarter of 2020, you can see expenses of 435 billion, which it compared with the second quarter of 2019 is solely a 2.5% increase, reiterating the expense control. Also, as of the fourth quarter of 2019, we see a decrease. And we also like to highlight that although the indicator of expenses as a percentage of revenue is increasing, this is more related to lower revenue not to more expenses. Moving on to the other graph on the very bottom right, we see that the company's operating earning, there are really two. One is the total operating earning with and without the reserve. We see that the second quarter of 20, how the operating earning was quite positive, which obviously has the revenue from reserves, and we see how the profit without reserve reached 123 billion pesos for this second quarter. Now let's move to slide number 18. And there you can see the bridge of the profit and to understand the variation of the profit of Suda Asset Management versus that held in 2019. We begin in 2019 with a profit of 424 billion. We're seeing that the major impact is related to the mandatory segment, and as we explained, because of Peru of $8 million and the reserve. The growth of revenue from commissions in this segment have dropped 1.8%, and the AUMs reached 437 billion pesos, up 7.7%. In the voluntary segment, we see a very positive growth in the revenue from commissions of 14.2%. And here we, as we said before, we can see that the net flow of the first semester of 1.9 trillion is very positive, and we'd like to highlight that we're reaching that figure of 57 trillion of AUMs growing 9.3%. The financial result of this company for exchange topics and the exposure we have in dollars in Chile after this investments made in annuities has been positive. To then end with a corporate segment that gathers the different items positive in 7 billion pesos and then reach a net profit final of Suda Asset Management for the first semester of 133 billion pesos. Thank you. Now let's move on to the Q&A session. Thank you. As of now, we will begin our Q&A session. We'll begin receiving the questions verbally from the people listening to us in Spanish. Those that are listening in English are only connected by the web. Please send your questions to the platform. We will be reading them and answering them later on. Those in the Spanish line, please, if you have a question, press star followed by one. If you want to remove your question, just press pound. Right now, we have a question from Catherine Ortiz from Davivienda Corredores. Hello, everybody. Good morning, and thank you for your presentation. I have two questions, or better yet, could you please tell us more about the development of the claims ratio? The most recent one, especially those of July and August, to have an idea of how these indicators can evolve since the results of this second quarter are impacted because of the lockdowns. And I'd like to know also if you could give us a guidance of what we can expect with these new claims ratio. That's first. Second, could you talk about the non-constitutional statement of the decree that had to do with the contributions? Do you have any more information of how that retroactive payment can be made regarding the contributions that were not perceived during this time? That's it. Thank you. Catherine, thank you so much for your questions. And allow me to answer the first, and Juan Fernando Uribe, who is the VP of Financial Affairs of Sudamericana, can answer the second question. With regards to health, there are two highlights. Our original budgets were impacted because of mortality, because of the COVID-19. The mortality curves we were making led us to make bigger reserves. When it comes to death rates, we're below those that we calculated, which were the biggest impacts, because healthcare services, because of the COVID-19, is not very expensive. And as we've mentioned, the oxygen therapy that we've been providing is not only great to serve people, but also reduces costs because there's no hospital bills. So we know when it comes to health, we have two big impacts. One was death and incapable and not going back to work. However, when it comes to deaths, we are way below the curve expected. And really, our data is quite exceptional. Of 0.57, 0.55 death rate, while the country is at 3.5, and the world as well. So we were talking, we've heard even that worldwide it's at 4. So when it comes to the COVID-19, we have better death rates. That has, of course, an impact on the ARL. We know that these are very difficult months. July has been very difficult. August and part of September, of course. In July, really, Sudamericana reached 75% of its profits levels. We insist 75. And it was a peak month. We have some August, so really we don't have the sensibility for August and September, but that's what we can say. I don't know if Ms. Rudy could compliment or correct me. Gonzalo, yes. Simply, I'd like to compliment by saying that in health we have COVID and non-COVID claims. Non-COVID, we have the normal procedures, and we've had non-priority proceedings that have been moved back. But still, as a company, we're making the due reserves because most of those procedures will take place later on in the second semester. And these have not taken place, of course, because people don't want to be close to a hospital or a health care center. So in that sense, the company has been making the reserves. So when the claims come, we will have the resources needed. And I'd like to underscore, as Gonzalo and Ricardo said before, we have been preparing to serve the people online. We have been providing the oxygen therapy. We have been sending people medications to their home to help everybody decrease their claims. Also, we have a great service of providing health care to the people at home if required. So that's something that I'd like to compliment. Thank you so much, Juan. I'd like to also highlight, you know this, but it's important to remember this. We have claims. We have some claims that are COVID and non-COVID. And remember, every day we are looking at curves in the risks area of Sudamericana. So we have to see the impacts of the claims ratio based on those curves. And what we've been doing is that once we get to see the reality, we can look at the reserves again and make positive variations, because the reserves that we had for the claims ratio could be always positive. So really, we have to take care that we have calculated properly our IBNR reserves. And there we can highlight again other topics. One, that our death rate is much lower and that the curves of those infected do go hand in hand with what we foresee in March. And the second question, I think Juan Luis can answer on how we can recover the quotes of the months when we only contribute, we only saw the 3% of the contributions to pensions. Basically, when it comes to the hedging, is that the national government has ruled a mechanism and a reasonable term to establish the return, or better, to make the contributions that were not made in a reasonable term and in installments. Okay. But what about the other segments? Could you give us more in terms of healthcare, are you asking? In claims ratio? Yes. What about the claims ratio of the other segments? There are two topics that are fundamental. With regards to healthcare, as Juan Fernando Uribe said, the reserves are made in these times. Yes, they are lower. Of course, taking care of the ICUs. So the reserves are made, but there's no doubt when it comes to electives, there is a decrease because there are services that are more of opportunity. And we see that a lot in the HMOs. To give you an exact data, that's curious. In a weekend, which in Colombia was a long weekend, and there were very, very, very few people that went to emergency in hospitals in it. So that's an elective type of healthcare system in which people are avoiding going to ICUs or better to emergencies. However, there are other services that cannot, like operations, surgeries, that people are just postponing so that the ICUs won't be full. With automobiles, we have obviously been seeing a lower claims ratio, especially because for the policies in different countries, we have for higher loyalty, we've been lowering the premiums. So there is a lower income and lower claims ratio. And so really, claims ratio is quite lower. When it comes to mandatory insurance, it's the same thing. When it comes to automobile claims ratio. And also, literally, if there's less industrial activity, you're less prone to risks. So, however, you have to look at maintenance of companies. But so far, the claims ratio has been lower, as Ricardo said. The retained claims ratio of the company has dropped generally throughout the company, especially with automobile. Juan, do you have something else to say? Yes, let me provide a data related to the claims ratio of the automobiles, which is so important in the non-life segment. Indeed, the claims ratio in the first months of the quarantine had a 45% drop. But by the end of last month, we started to see increase. And that drop of 45% is now at 20. So as we start to see normalcy again, the claims ratio has been dropped. But still, it's below the normal levels. That because of the COVID. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you so much for your answers. Yes. Next question, Nicolás Viva from Bank of America. Thank you for the opportunity to ask you questions. I'd like to make two questions. One, on the recent issuance of bonds that you made of $260 million, I understand that the use of that money is to pay off liabilities. Could you confirm that you're going to be using that money to pay off the bond of $300 million? And second, how are you going to be reducing the exposure and the size of your debt in dollars through the holding? Another question is related to Suda Asset Management. Could you tell us briefly, what's your opinion, your analysis of the project you have in Mexico to decrease the money that's given by employers for these pension funds, especially with AUMs? And do you expect any drop in Mexico, which could be a negative offset? Could you give us an analysis? And also, when it comes to Suda Asset Management in Chile, as you said, people could take out 10% of their pension. I understand it doesn't have a direct impact on your business, but in Chile, it's people can have a pension. It's based on their salary. So, could you tell us more about Suda Asset Management and the changes seen in Mexico and Chile? Thank you. Nicolás, thank you so much for your questions. My name is Ricardo Jaramillo, and let me answer your questions about the bonds to give you more context about what we discussed already. First, even before COVID-19, we anticipated on how we could refinance this $300 million that we had to pay off in January 2021. The rate at which we had covered those resources, which that billion we had, $850 billion, are required to pay that $300 million bond that you're mentioning. Right now, we're making different analyses to see what's best purely financially to buy the bond with a premium or to have the resources invested. As of today, what we could say that it's much more efficient to have those resources invested, even because of the rate that we have is very positive. So probably we will have those resources until their maturity, but we want to monitor this still step by step. We're also talking about $150 billion that we took, which, as we said before, the setting was good. The Colombian market had liquidity, an appetite for AAA investors, and really the setting was good for that. And with those $150 in addition, we will pay bank debts. That's more expensive. And at the end of the day, we'll have an optimization of the cost of financing. Likewise, this company receives its revenues in pesos. So as we have our debt, one, related to pesos, and second, distributed in different areas, is something that is much better for the cash flow of the company. So in our viewpoint, for the financial performance of the company, this has been great for the company. And even before the pandemic, we looked at different options with hedges and everything, and this was the best alternative. Even our analysis, we never expected a weighted average like that. So again, it has been quite positive. For your second question, Gonzalo can give us his opinion, and Carlos Oquendo can compliment. Thank you, Ricardo. Thank you for your question. When it comes to Mexico, as we said originally, that amount from 6 to 15% was positive for everybody. The affiliates, because really the replacement rate is higher, and the idea is that the coverage for formal employment is 97%, as we said. We're talking about 150% increase in the quote, and that's positive as well, as we said, because it increases the AUMs for the pension funds. Again, for the affiliates, this is very important, because that increase comes from the employers. So today, really what we're seeking very specially after making an analysis in Mexico of how we can regulate and what we can do from here on with regards to the pension system, the idea is that we really want to be very transparent and exact in maximum and critical exposures to see what the replacement rates will be, because I think that the problem has been, when it comes to reputation worldwide, is that pension funds, after 20 or 30 years with private funds, were difficult to access. But there are other topics, like the number of quotes, and in Latin America especially, because of the informality rate. So first, we have to be very clear on what are the expectations with these 15% quotes of the possibility of the replacement rate, and how many weeks should be quoted. So the customers and affiliates have a very clear vision of what will happen, and that in 5 or 10 years, we won't have a negative impact on them. So that's where our responsibility lies. With regards to the reduction of the commissions or fees, yes, there is one. Below the 150% increase of the AUMs, and with that, we can compensate, but it leads to something that SURA Asset Management and SURA Americana have to work on, and it's to have absolute efficiency of their operations so that with low margins they can operate. It's like the EPS in Colombia that works with claims ratio of 24% with expenses of 4.5%. And so the idea is to reduce the operating cost to the point that with lower fees, we can still be profitable with returns above the capital cost that we have in the company. So although it is true that the fees will drop, I think that that increase of 120% of AUMs is important. And the idea is to anticipate in these operations so that the return can be the one expected. However, let's listen to Carlos Oquendo, who knows more about this topic, to complement and add his ideas on this matter. And if I'm wrong, just let me know, Carlos. Thank you, Gonzalo. Firstly, I'd like to know, can you hear me okay? Yes, we can. Look, with regards to Mexico, I agree with what Gonzalo said. And I'd like to add that our forecast as of 2024 really included a drop of 0.70. But now with this new regulation, all of the scenarios that we've had to reach that guidance in the reform leave us this peace of mind that although it affects the revenue the profit and the ROIs of the business will continue being way above the WAC and the possibilities that we have to continue being profitable. On the other hand, Nicolas, I want to talk about Chile with you. As you have said, well, revenue there depend not only of the release of the reserves, and that can give us capital that would depend how much people can withdraw. We're talking about $20-25 million. And on the other hand, another positive effect, and I think Gonzalo already mentioned it, is the perception that people have in Chile that the resources are theirs. This wasn't very clear before. To give you statistics, we had discussions before the pandemic on the reform, the possible pension reform in Chile, and the creation of a fund with an extra contribution made by the employees. Before the pandemic, we're talking about 35% of the people thought that there would be an individual fund. So at the end, this attracted benefits when it comes to the perception of the system and the appropriation of the client regarding it, their own resources. Thank you so much for your answers. Next question from Joanna Castro from Itaú BBA. Hello, good morning. Thank you for receiving my question. I have a question on the ARL, workers' compensation, and the number of affiliates that you have, which I think are 4 million employees that are covered by you. In the report, you say that in expenses of the ARL, only 30% of investments of corporations and tests for COVID. Is that the increase that we saw in the quarter? Or from here on, will you have a similar expense? And my second question, why do you say that administrative expenses include the protection gear? I understand that Grupo Sura size, and this is something small, but just to have a context, because we know that the setting will change because of COVID. Joanna, hello. Let's listen to Juan Uribe to give you the answers, and we'll be complimenting him. Okay? Great. Hello, Joanna. When it comes to the ARL with the expenses that you mentioned to date, and those expenses are at 50 billion pesos. And here, due to the Decree 438 in which the company had to participate, with many investments in housekeeping and protection gear with all the affiliates for the prevention of COVID, to date we have 50,000, and the idea for the rest of the year it will be at 80 billion, which is needed for these types of investments, which is a benefit, of course, for all the companies and the employees that we have. We have been investing in protection gear about 23 billion. So we have handed out 12.5 million protection gears in 119 municipalities throughout the country to all of our affiliates. And obviously, we've been providing assistance to the healthcare sector where we also have many affiliates, and we have provided them all of the gear required. So these are the figures, really. If they're operating or administrative expenses, you're right. It has more, it's more related to classification, but those are the figures, per se. You can talk about $50 billion, and possibly the idea is to reach $80 billion by the end of the year. Allow me to add that you're right. Even within the company in Colombia, part of those goods are what we call part of what goes directly to the customer. So that's where you see a difference between the operating and the administrative expenses. But we're talking about really $50 billion. And that affectation is directly related to the technical results. The other are operating results. Yes, you're right. But it's more about classifications. But if you look at the companies per se, the of life or casualty, these protective gears are given out. If you allow me to ask a follow-up question when it comes to COVID, do you believe that by the time we have the vaccine, would the ARL be responsible of giving out the vaccine to its affiliates? Could you give us an idea about that? What happens when the vaccine comes out? When it comes to the vaccine, to date, we have no doubt of the coverage, really. More than the ARL, the coverage should be assumed by the basic health care plan. And here I'm just talking about what naturally what we should look at. This is a country which has never doubted. When you look at the news of other countries, even those that are very developed, it is whoever covers the COVID are others, but there's no doubt here, and this impacted the claims ratio. And the vaccine, I'm trying just to speculate here, but I don't think I'm wrong if I say that it's part of the basic health care plan, because it has to do with public health. And if included there, the government is including the costs related to the HMOs. So every time you include a new procedure or service in healthcare, every year you include that new drug and you reimburse the HMO for the basic healthcare plan. So I have no doubt that in Colombia, the vaccine will be part of the basic health care plan. Originally, we're talking about $60 million Colombians, and they are fundamentally those that are above 60 for their exposure. I would say the vaccine begins those that are in the health care system, those that are above 60, and those that are most vulnerable, and then those that are not part of those three. We're talking about $30 million in Colombia, but I have no doubt that it will be part of the basic health care plan. Thank you so much for your answer. Next question from Mr. Andres Duarte from Corpit, Colombia. Good morning. Thank you for your presentation. Congratulations for the great management made in such complicated times. I have two questions, both related to expectations. One, after the effects of the COVID, can you expect any change in the proportion of retained premiums compared to what you are reinsuring in different lines? That's my first question. And the other question is more focused towards asset management. In the future, the medium or long term, not only in developed countries, but also in Latin America, what impact do you expect in the different businesses, as I said, especially in asset management? Thank you so much for answering my questions. Look, with regards to the retained premiums, when it comes to COVID, we have to say the following. In the company, in the different countries where we operate, because of the frequency and exposure of healthcare, the premiums related to healthcare are normal. If you look at the company in Colombia where we have the most operations, but in proportion to the other nine countries, the ratio is almost at 100%, and we're looking at catastrophes to protect very specific peaks. So we don't expect, and we just, I mean, in July we just renewed the contracts of reinsurance, and there were no major variations in those agreements. In fact, they were very tranquil, and that gives good signs. So we don't expect any different retentions. Again, in healthcare, we're at 100%, but basically for catastrophe protections and life as well. So there, we don't see any inconvenience or any changes in the retained premiums in a relevant fashion. When it comes to specific cases, there are more changes of non-life or property. The idea here, it has to do with the reinsurance more than the other items, like automobile life and insurance. So really, I don't see any changes. We already renewed the agreements of reinsurance without major changes. So we expect that for next year there are no major changes. Let me make some comments about the second question about the asset management. I would begin by saying that your question is quite extensive, and the world is seeing a trend. Financing costs that are quite major, that are even negative in some countries. As Gonzalo said before, we have to position ourselves as an excellent operator when it comes to efficiency, not only regarding the services that we provide, but also the capital that we have invested. The scale that we can reach in the business, that's very important as well. And we see it as a trend in the rest of the world, especially with the asset managers. If you have good scale, you have lower fees and obviously better returns. But I'd like to say something that has not been addressed enough, but we have to reach and address it. And I think that we have to look at the different costs. These businesses have operating costs that have to do with financial revenues. So to still think about high capital costs, knowing that the returns of the investments made are going to be low, there's a gap there that everybody will have to review and question. But now, as a company, and I'm not saying it because of the current crisis, but instead before, we have to look at how to improve our efficiencies, both in operating and capital management, to face the new settings that we have financially. Great. Thank you so much for your answers. Hello, can you hear me? Yes, sir. Good morning, Gonzalo, Ricardo, Juan Carlos. I would like to ask you two things. On the regulatory changes in the RRPs, we already saw the approval of the chance that the affiliates can withdraw resources, but I'd like to understand if these resources already withdrawn or expected to be withdrawn in the next 12 months, how can they affect your business if that capital will be distributed as dividends? That's my first question. My second question is on the bid in Colombia, in which they're going to do something similar to that of Chile, so people can take out more or withdraw more of their savings. And I'd like to know that on a medium or long-term basis, how this will affect you, especially the resources. So what's your opinion about the effect on the replacement rates on our long-term basis? And at third, could you talk to us more about the voluntary business and asset management and the operating leverage and how it has evolved in the voluntary business and how much and how long will it take until you see positive results in this business? Thank you, Daniel. Let me give you an introduction to your questions. And Ricardo and Carlos and my colleagues can say more about this. First, when it comes to the regulatory topic, beginning with the replacement rates, these are hurt since the 10% withdrawal is made, especially in Chile or in Peru, which is already taking place. We believe that clearly this will not benefit the replacement rates, and we have to recalculate the affiliates to be transparent. What we are seeing, and we'd like to underscore, is that there's been a positive outlook of the people having the savings there. I mean, it really changed the history of the pension funds. We're seeing this in Chile clearly. Now people talk about pension funds much more positively. So knowing that the saving is there, we estimate undoubtedly that taking care of savings is will be higher. To the fact, there was an article that the regulation will be even less aggressive because people estimate that the 10% withdrawal, and those that thought that the 10% could make people withdraw everything is a mistake, because really what we see is from feedback is that the private pension funds are the ones that clearly are showing the best results. I think it's quite relevant, and we have to seek how to recalculate the replacement rates. However, we believe that withdrawal has really not been what has pushed the regulations. I think it's really shown people that the money is there, that the money is theirs, and that the regulation has been good. So when it comes to the regulation per se. We're headed towards that. In Chile, we saw it. In Peru, we saw it with empathy, really. There are persons that have savings and are experiencing difficulties. It's not natural for people that have a long-term savings, but still, we have to be empathetic with the people and societies and say, okay, perhaps that 10% will help most of the people to solve the unemployment rates, for instance. Obviously, with the clarity that you mentioned, that everybody should transparently look at the replacement rates. But our feeling is still positive. We'd like to underscore that we anticipate that this with AFP Capital, saying that we need the people to be able to take out the money without inconveniences. The banks became our bottlenecks. They and we even gave the money 3 days beforehand. Yes, we did lose the 10%, but we do believe that we gained a good name. When it comes to Colombia, I don't know if this will take place. I wouldn't dare to anticipate to this because it's not timely. When this process takes place, we don't know really when the economic reactivation will be at 100%. I don't think it's good to keep this in mind. Anyway, Protección has made its recalculations. And really what we need is a lot of advice. We need to work closely. And part of what we did with AFP Capital was to provide alternate funds, meaning people have taken the money out of the mandatory and move them to alternate funds. And our alternative is for people to use the voluntary funds. We have to be clear. Most of the people that make withdrawals earn very small salaries. And that we also have to say, sometimes we satinize people that earn little and buy the biggest TVs. But still, it's a small percentage of the population. And in another chance, it has to do with sociology, really. It makes sense. But let's see what happens in Colombia. And it doesn't hurt as much when it comes to Protección. What is fearful about this regulation is that the idea is that it could be touching the funds, but I believe that this experience will lead us otherwise. Proof is that the Constitutional Court of Colombia, not even moving from 16 to 3 in this period, passed. So it shows clearly that the court, in the quote reduction, approved it. So there are some guidances there from the Constitutional Court and public policies that allow us to say, yes, the pension reform is a fact, but it won't reach the extremes that we're thinking of. Proof is like that of Mexico, which we feared so much about. Carlos, do you have anything else to say about this? Yes, Gonzalo. Just to add some of the remarks made, when it comes to the release of capital, the calculations we've made for Chile, it's about $20-25 million once we this process will take a full year, so we'll be observing of what resources are and what we'll do with them. Secondly, with regards to the repercussions in the different businesses, for instance, in Peru, when we had the approval of the law 999, there was really a drive of our business, of the voluntary business in Peru. I think it's premature still to know what will happen. The money is mainly being deposited in bank accounts. But with this reform, there's something that has to do with the fiscal area. So I believe that this will have a positive impact that we'll see by the end of the year, but that fiscal component would lead a lot of people to place these resources in their voluntary pensions. With regards to your questions on voluntary savings, right now Suda Asset Management has divided the non-mandatory businesses into one is called the wealth management for individuals, and others are investment managements more focused on corporations. For wealth management, this year we're making a large investment in Mexico, led mainly to reach a population more remotely online. If we would isolate those effects or that investment from the results, the results of wealth management would be displaying at least some black numbers. So there is an effect there. I mean, wealth management has been growing at double digits with revenues and increased AUMs. And if it weren't for that investment made in Mexico, but it will have repercussions, and we will be using it in the entire region. We would have black figures. For wealth management, we've been strongly investing with great teams, and we've seen the need in the past 2 years to increase the capex to manage operating processes in a safer manner, in a more efficient manner. So I'd say that those are the two types of investments, that of Mexico and CapEx, in processes and individuals made. So the results are going towards the right path. But when it comes to the growth of AUMs and net flows are quite positive. So we do have a mandatory business that's still very strong, showing good results based on the variables that we want to have an impact on, for instance, revenue, net flow, and AUM. So there we're okay. I think that's basically the answer to your questions. Is there something missing? Thank you. I wanted to know if you could give us more details about the operating leverage of the of voluntary asset management, because when it increases scales, of course it increases the leverage. Could you give us more ideas about that? I propose the following. We have a series of questions that arrived by writing, but we have to hang up now. So I propose that the different questions left unresponded, we can have another meeting, or you can contact Juan Carlos from Investor Relations so that we can look at them. Again, reviewing the questions that we received through the chat, most of them have been replied. Here's another question made by Daniel for the operating leverage. But we must hang up because the operator has to get another call. So on our behalf, we'd like to thank you for your questions, your comments, for joining us today. This is a situation that we will be covering, step by step, month after month. And the idea is to share with you how the companies are operating. Thank you all. Thank you, everybody. We will be answering all the questions that you may have through Juan Carlos. And here we are, Ricardo, Carlos, Juan Uribe, all the people, including myself. We will be answering the questions that we couldn't answer today. Thank you so much for joining us, and have a great week.